Mental Health Monday
on Radio City Talk
with Mick Coyle.
Tackling the stigma.
Radio City Talk.
Very pleased to say we've got three guests in the studio for Mental Health Monday this week. We're going to have a really interesting conversation and touch on an issue we've not really touched on as part of the series so far. We're going to take a look at eating disorders. Next week is Eating Disorders Awareness Week, running from the 26th of February to the 4th of March. This year, asking the question, why wait? Some new stats around this suggest that actually 149 weeks will pass before those experiencing eating disorder symptoms will actually seek help. Don't need me to tell you that. That's basically 3 years, 1,043 days before then people speak out. So we're going to talk through all those issues. And I'm very pleased to say we've got a series of guests in the studio who are going to give us a really good heads up as to what these eating disorders are all about and what we can do to help people in that particular situation. We've got from Talking to Eating Disorders, Lee Best in the studio. Lee, it's great to see you. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you.
We'll meet the rest of the crew in a few moments. First up, talk through Talking Eating Disorders.
Yeah. Well, it's a community organisation which I founded 18 years ago now. I can't believe it. I was a lot younger. And I founded it because somebody in my own family had an eating disorder and we were just left to cope alone. And I couldn't quite believe that. Sadly, I have to say, 18 years later, although there have been some small improvements in healthcare, the situation is still the same. So the way the system works is we're very, very lucky in the city that we have got specialist services. However, you have to go to your GP to access those services. You're likely to be on a long waiting list. Sadly, eating disorders are full of resistance, really, and people who are just not ready to change, just not ready, but still need emotional support. So as I'm always saying to people, you know, therapy is for people who want it, not for people who need it. So if you need help, but you're not quite ready to engage in therapy, you're not really going to get the help unless you come to TEDS. So we're very, very unusual. We've always been unique because we don't turn anybody away. So whether you've never spoken to anybody about your eating disorder, which many people haven't, whether you're on a long waiting list, which many people are, or whether you've tried some kind of therapy and it didn't work for you, but you still need help, you can come to TEDS. We're also very unique in the sense that we provide an enormous amount of help and practical information for the family as well. So we don't work with people in isolation. We try and wrap around the whole family and help everybody because these disorders can last for years. Mm. It's one of the hardest things for us when people access our service is try and sort of empower people, but also try and get their heads around, look, you're in for a long haul here.
There's so many issues to talk about. I think most people, when they hear eating disorders, will instantly go, well, that's anorexia or bulimia. Mm. They'll be the two that they'll know. I don't know if they're the most common or if they're just, you know, the tip of the iceberg. How does it play out in terms of conditions contained within that overall category?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, really. There's diagnostic criteria that mental health professionals use. So the main ones are anorexia, bulimia, binge eating disorder, and something else called EDNOS, which means eating disorders not otherwise specified. What people don't understand is that many people who make themselves sick will restrict, and many people who restrict will make themselves sick. So if you do that, you're likely to be lumped into EDNOS. Anorexia, although it's actually the rarest eating disorder, it's the most instantly recognisable, I think, because of the very obvious physical signs. It's really important to say to people that you can't actually tell if someone's got an eating disorder just by looking at them. You can with anorexia, I guess, but anybody else, you could be normal weight, underweight, overweight, you wouldn't know. Anorexia has the highest suicide rate of any mental health illness. So again, it's something we do is train parents to assess suicide risk, which is a really, really tough thing for a parent to get their head around. But it's something that we believe is really, really important. And when we're working with, well, I said before I come on, I hate the word sufferer. We like to call people eating disorder warriors. So because it is a fight. And no matter, I used to hate that metaphor, but actually consistently people who are fighting the illness say it is a fight. Mm. It's important for me to say it's a fight that you can win. And with the right help and support, people do recover. You can recover. You can get well. But they never sit alone. So there will always be anxiety, always, because there's anxiety before food, during food, after food. But eating disorders themselves aren't actually about the food. They're about the feelings, the emotions. That's the key to recovery, we believe.
Can I ask you about that? Because I think a lot of people who, when we talk about stigma, we often talk about stigma when it comes to mental health, it comes around ignorance. And I think the ignorance around this is based on the fact that eating disorders are, it's a vanity thing, it's people obsessed with the way that they look, and if they wanted to eat, they could, or if they wanted to stop making themselves sick, they could. So for some, almost as if it was a lifestyle choice, if you like.
What I would say is that is absolutely not true. It's not a slimmer's disease. It's a psychological disturbance. And what we've seen over the last 18 years, people, I would say, come across sort of mild, moderate and very, very severe. The psychological suffering, the emotional torture is horrific. It's really horrific. An eating disorder is very punitive, very punishing. There's always low self-esteem, self-loathing. It's much, much more than that. Many, as I said earlier, many people suffer. You would never know they had an eating disorder. It is not just about weight and shape. However, saying that from our experience, because we do a lot of work in schools in terms of early intervention and preventing eating disorders, we do discourage dieting. In our culture, dieting tends to mean missing food groups out, becoming vegetarian. There's a lot of vegetarians and vegans in TEDS, and missing food groups out, restricting, going hungry, skipping meals. And that can, along with other factors, I think the real message to get across is nobody can really give a definitive answer as to what the cause of eating disorders are. They're very, very complex. They're a mental illness. But we would definitely discourage people from going on a diet. So we try and talk about strength and wellness and self-care. I said last week when I was on, for us, you know, we all have mental health. We all have mental health. I'm in therapy at the moment as good self-care. So I'm making a point of telling everybody I'm in therapy because it's really, really important to acknowledge we all have mental health. We all need to tend to it. And people with eating disorders really suffer. Underpinning that is often things like anxiety and depression, OCD, self-harm, many other factors. So it takes time and compassion and kindness and patience to unpick that. We started a project in TEDS about 3 months ago that is just magical, is the only way I can describe it. And it's a closed group for eating disorder warriors only. And the stories of suffering in that group and the efforts to recover are quite phenomenal. So we're hoping as a result of being on the radio, some people will join us in that work.
We've got Lee Best with us from Talking Eating Disorders, TEDS, as she's referenced as well. Let's go a little bit deeper into this story now. We've got Tina in the studio as well. Tina, thank you for your time. Great to see you. Just tell us about how you and Lee first came to know each other.
Okay. I got introduced to Lee 5 years ago when one of my daughters was diagnosed with an eating disorder, specifically anorexia. And when I looked out in the community to see what support and help there was, I found very quickly that apart from Lee, there was nothing at all. I live on the Wirral and there were no facilities at all that I could access for myself and my family. So I was introduced to Lee by my daughter's school, where Lee had recently done a training day. And Lee became a lifeline for me and my family. And it was just, it was such a relief when I went to the first support group to find other people who knew what I was going through as a mum of somebody suffering when I'd taken my daughter to the doctors initially, I was told that I could wait, or she could wait, approximately six weeks on the NHS at the time, which was, by the standards today, was relatively good. But unfortunately, my daughter didn't have 6 weeks, but yet we were still sent away and told that, sorry, there isn't any other option unless you want to pay private. And to be turned away from your own GP when your daughter is physically disappearing before your eyes is a very, very difficult thing to see and to take. So I was, when I got introduced to Lee, it was good to know that there was hope, because we felt very isolated as a family, and it was good to know that there are other people out there going through the same difficulties as we were. Lee became not just she became a friend, and she's a colleague now, because we now work together, because I became quite passionate about the fact that there aren't any facilities on the Wirral. So about 2-3 years ago now, we opened up another support group for families that can't get over to Liverpool, and we meet on the third Monday of each month over on the Wirral. To help families over there access support with Lee and myself both there in attendance.
Producer Lizzie will clock me over the head for saying this, but I say it every week, and I won't stop saying it, because whenever we talk about different subjects on this programme, particularly for Mental Health Monday, I use the phrase trailblazers all the time, and it's about people turning and looking for help. And often people turn, and if they don't find anything, they have to be the difference. Now, Lee, that ended up being you, but it just goes to show that actually when Tina was in your situation or a very similar situation and she looked for somewhere to turn to, Tina, you had Lee and the work that she'd done. How vital was it, and how crucial was it that she was there?
It was honest. I can't, you know, without sounding dramatic, I really don't know what I would have done, because there was nobody else out there. Nobody, I didn't, in my circle of friends and family, nobody else had experience of an eating disorder. So I felt very, very isolated. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to try and, you know, help my daughter. She was on a waiting list. We did manage to get help privately, but even that took time. So to have Lee on the end of the phone and there in person to reassure me that, you know, there was help, there was hope for my daughter and for us as a family, was crucial.
Yeah, you talk about sitting in the GP's office. I imagine in terms of the journey that you've been on, that's the start of one chapter, but I guess the chapters that came before that were very difficult to experience as a parent in particular.
Yeah, extremely so. I mean, my daughter was actually diagnosed quite quickly. We were fortunate in, I think Lee commented on this earlier, about early intervention. And early intervention is key. And we were fortunate that we discovered my daughter's situation quite early on. So we were able comparatively to what some families go through, we were able to get her help quite quickly, which is vital.
And what were those things? What were those? You don't have to give us the details specifically, but what sort of things were you starting to notice? A difference where you thought, hang on a minute, there's something's not quite right here.
Yeah, there was an obvious sign of dramatic weight loss. But more importantly, it was her mood and her personality. A very outgoing, vivacious, sociable young girl, 17 at the time, suddenly became very introverted, didn't want to leave our side, didn't want to go out anywhere, didn't want to, was skipping meals, exercising excessively. But little things, sometimes, you know, some of those things didn't really add up to much. But it was only when she got to the point where she just stopped eating completely when we were on holiday. And then that's when things took a dramatic turn.
I mean, from a parenting point of view, everyone does everything they can to protect their child. When there's like this thing that's going on in their mind and you're not quite sure what they're thinking, and you can see the physical impact that that's having, was that upsetting for you? Was it frustrating for you? I imagine emotionally it was a very difficult time.
It wasn't frustrating, it was extremely upsetting. And just that not knowing what to do, we're just totally isolated and totally or completely it was something completely alien to us. We just didn't know what to do and where to turn. And fortunately, a couple of weeks after that, when things came to a head, that's when I met Lee. And that's when I think the things started to change for me as a mum. And because things started to change for me, I was then able to help my daughter better because I was better equipped and better prepared to help her with her battle.
And in terms of the journey that you went on as well, your understanding of her situation, at what point did you sort of think, I get a sense now that there's a mental health condition here, that there is a wider issue other than a physical appearance thing, that there's something going on in the mind, and that's something that will be, not so simple to address, but something which is going to take a long period of time.
Quite quickly, actually, in her case. I know that's not always the situation, but with my daughter, she deteriorated quite rapidly, both physically and emotionally, and became very withdrawn. Almost like it was as though my daughter had walked out of the house and then somebody else's daughter who looked like mine another being had walked into the house, and she looked like my daughter, but she didn't have the soul. She didn't have the personality. It was like a shell of my daughter. That's the only way I can really describe it. And that is heartbreaking. Heartbreaking to see.
We've got the team from Talking Eating Disorders with us in the studio. Lee Best, and Tina's been sharing her story as well with her own experience within her family. We're going to bring Cara into the conversation as well. Cara, great to see you. Thank you for your time on Mental Health Monday today. Lee said, we don't call people sufferers, we call people warriors.
Eating disorder warriors.
Do you feel like a warrior at the moment?
I do feel like a warrior, yeah. I think it's a great way to bring people together to call them warriors, because it means they're fighting. And I think in eating disorder you have to fight it with every muscle in your body.
So you're young now, you don't mind me saying you're young, but at what point did you realize you had an eating disorder, or did things change within your life that put you on that particular path?
I think it's about 2 years ago. I started with anxiety, really bad anxiety, and I couldn't sleep. I was up all night every night. So I managed to see a brilliant private therapist who, as soon as she seen me, she knew straight away I had an eating disorder. So she rang the right people and got me in touch with them, and that's how it all started.
So was the eating disorder caused by the anxiety, or do you think the two were interlinked?
Oh no, definitely interlinked. I don't think eating disorders sit alone at all. And mine, still now, I get really bad anxiety, and they both bounce off each other. So if I've got really high levels of anxiety, my eating disorder tends to settle a little. But then when the eating disorder comes up, my anxiety will settle. So it's a bit of both, yeah.
So you're always striking that balance. At what point did you realise that food was a currency within that, that you were eating differently, or that you were changing your eating patterns based on how you were feeling?
I think that's the problem, because I didn't realise. And it's only now, really, that I realise how much of a problem it was. I was eating really few calories, exercising every day, and no matter how many times people told me to stop, I thought that I was absolutely fine. I didn't think there was a problem. And even going to Ted's is absolutely amazing, and that was the first place I ever spoke about having an eating disorder. But I remember speaking to Lee, and I was telling her that I had anorexia and I was diagnosed with it, but I didn't believe it. And I was telling her that I was eating fewer calories, but I didn't believe it. I knew in my head, I believed that it was absolutely fine. I was functioning fine, and I was great. And even through, I did 1.5 years of therapy, and even in therapy, I didn't engage, because what they were saying wasn't true. I knew that I was a low weight and I knew I was a low BMI, but I didn't believe that it was affecting me. Like, I know now that it did.
So just tell us about some of those effects, because, of course, you're doing the exercise, presumably in your own mind, you can justify that to yourself. You go, well, I'm exercising, this is good for me. But you said you were eating low calorie, 2,000, I think, is the recommended amount for a woman. What would you be eating on any given day?
I was aiming to 450 calories was maximum. And I was, I played netball and I did CrossFit. So I did that every odd day. So I used to have one day off, rest, really. But it worked. I could function, but really I wasn't functioning. It looked like I was on the outside, but I was fainting. I've got a little boy. I couldn't look after him properly because I was absolutely exhausted. I couldn't sleep, and I was working nights and going to uni at the same time. So I was just up all night, awake in uni all day, then working and then exercising. And It's definitely not a good balance.
So 450 calories, what does that look like then? What would you be eating over the course of a day?
It was salad with a bit of a dressing on, maybe. Or my eating sort is a bit different than people that I have spoke to, because a lot of people have safe foods, whereas I never had safe foods. So I could eat a pizza as long as it didn't go over my calories. I could eat McDonald's, I could eat chips, I could eat whatever I wanted to, as long as I didn't go over the calories. But when I was exercising, I'd stick to more like salad things, so I could eat more to get the calories in, really.
So it's interesting how you're talking there, because you're almost like talking like you had a regimented diet. You'd almost set yourself up. Well, I can do this because I know if I have that number of calories, I can still do my fitness classes, and then I get my uni work. Like you were a functioning anorexic, if you like.
That's how it is. I think that's the message to get across, that when you've got an eating disorder, it's such a mental battle. So even now, sat here talking to you, I am in recovery now, but all I think about constantly is food. So it's, when's my next snack? How much am I going to eat? Can I avoid it? Can I exercise instead? When's dinner? What am I going to eat for dinner? Can I eat that much? Can I not eat that much? It's a constant battle all day. So you have to plan your whole day out. So like, I play netball, I play for two teams. And if one of the matches got cancelled, but I'd eaten in the day to match that exercise on the night, then I'd have to try and match. I'd have to find a new way to exercise. And if I had my little boy and I couldn't, then that would just send me loopy. And other people don't understand it from the outside. So from the outside, I think when Tina was saying her daughter, her personality changed, mine changed. And I knew that everyone was walking on eggshells around me all the time. But it's because I was so focused on food that I couldn't focus on anybody else or anything else. So it changes you completely as a person. Which,
it's interesting that, because Tina said, you know, it was almost as if her daughter, when she walked out the door, came back, she'd lost her soul. Yeah. And actually, the soul, the very heart of sort of who you are. Was that how it kind of felt for you, that you were kind of thinking, well, the obsession, if you like, with food and exercise had just sort of taken out over everything else?
Yeah, I think at the time, no, I did think I was absolutely fine, and I couldn't understand why everyone thought I was being mean or saying the wrong thing, because I got quite abrupt, I think, because I just couldn't cope with, I was thinking of calories all the time. So when someone asked me a question, I was like trying to just, you know, get an answer, get them away, because I didn't want to talk about anything else. I could talk about food all day, every day, because that's all I want to talk about, because that's what all I think about. So I think at the time, no. But now when I look back, I was a completely different person. And I still am, in a way. I'm not like I was before the eating disorder. I think that's the goal, to get back there. But yeah, it does. Yeah, it completely changes as a person.
So in terms of getting help, speaking to a therapist or people who can put you on a different path, do you feel like the treatment you're getting is about the issues going on within your mind, the way you think about things? Or do you think there's sort of like the health, the fitness, the exercise type of thing, striking a right balance there is another path you could go down?
I think if you're ready for therapy, which is a hard thing to get your head around. When I was in therapy, my therapist used to say, you're ambivalent. You're not, and I didn't even know what it meant. And she kept saying it over and over, you're not ready. I don't think you're ready. And I'd be like, I am, I'm here. But I wasn't. I was there and I was going every week, but I was still losing weight every week. So I'd go and I'd get on the scales and I'd lose weight. And then I'd go the next week and go. And it didn't make sense, because I wasn't ready to get help. Whereas I think now I am ready. So I can go back into therapy and deal with things I need to deal with. But a lot of people aren't ready. So I think doing whatever you can to help yourself, like TED's, or like any other support group. I'm on a Facebook support group, which just has people with eating disorders and families talking. Anything you can do just to talk. And I think the first time you speak to someone, it's really nerve-wracking and it's really scary, because the first time I spoke at TED's was the first time I'd ever spoke to anybody about my eating disorder. But once you've got it out and once you've spoke once, then all your nerves go away and it just becomes... it becomes a lot easier.
So I think this is where it's really interesting. Cara's with us in the studio, Tina too, and Lee Bestley. I think this is the thing between it being a mental health condition, but also the obsession that came around it as well, that when you start to change somebody's mindset, presumably you talk through, you know, what a healthy calorie intake would be over the course of the day. But then I guess if it's just that, then it doesn't deal with maybe some of the other issues that somebody might be dealing with.
To be honest with you, this is where TED's is a bit unique. We avoid talking about food. We avoid talking about weight and shape. We avoid any sort of unhelpful comments. We're very kind. I think our model is like a kindness and compassionate model. What we do with Tuesday TEDs, it's quite deliberately at lunchtime, 12 till 2. Anybody who knows me knows I don't skip lunch ever. So we have food there. We have nibbles at the groups we run. We try and normalise food. And we actually just try and talk about feelings, experiences. We have very practical information that we give people. What people aren't being given is ideas of how to encourage people to eat well. And I mentioned that book before. There's a book that we recommend if people go on our website, tedsuk.com, or get in touch with us. So most people, to be honest with you, whether they've got an eating disorder or not, know what good health is. People know what healthy eating is. People know what their body needs. Most people I've supported over the last 18 years, even though I've got a qualification in nutrition to help me with my work, know much more about nutrition. So for that reason, we try much more to talk about the emotional wellness of the person, the challenges they face, the trauma they've had, their low self-esteem, their unhelpful beliefs about themselves. And, you know, many people actually have a good inkling of how the eating disorder developed and where it developed. It's very, very common for people to say to me, if I say to people, when can you remember not feeling good enough? Because actually a lot of this comes down to, for whatever reason, comparing yourself unfavourably. We have lots of little sayings in TED. So one of them is to compare is to despair. And it's very, very common for people to say, I was 5 or I was 6 or I was 7. So people have these sorts of feelings of dissatisfaction, if you like, or not fitting in, or not feeling the same as everyone else from a very, very young age. And we're able to sort of explore that in the TEDS groups, and we listen to music. We've got a creative writing course going on at the moment. We like to really think outside of the box because, as Cara will tell you, you can't say to an adult with anorexia, just eat. They know that. You can't give them a diet sheet and say that's what you should be eating. They know that. So we try and think laterally, think out of the box. And actually, what I have learned, and I would say this to any eating disorder warrior listening, this is a fight that actually gets easier. And I've heard that over and over again with people once they get in recovery, that if they keep going, and there's real simple things we say like, look, don't skip a meal, don't skip a meal, don't do anything that's going to trigger that eating disorder behaviour. Eat well, don't skip a meal. And what happens is it gets easier. Somewhere down the recovery road, that fight gets easier. So, yeah, it's quite interesting. For us, the focus on the food might be from the family, where we'll give them practical help on. It's actually quite challenging to put weight on if you've got anorexia. There's a very serious condition called refeeding syndrome that often families aren't told about. And we discuss that with the families as well. So we try and give the families really practical help on how to safely help their loved one put weight on. But at the same time, there is much more of a focus on the feelings and the emotions and the thoughts as well.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle
on Radio City Talk.
Yeah, it's a busy one this week on Mental Health Monday. So much time that has passed that we've got to spend a little bit more of it on the podcast. And I'm very pleased to say that Lee, Tina and Cara have stuck around. We ran out of time on the radio show, so I think that's testament to the stories that you've told and the fact we've got to get so much more information out there. Eating Disorders Awareness Week is next week. And there's a book which you're going to mention the details of as well, Lee. And yeah. Cara, you were sharing your story. Tina, we didn't get a chance on the live radio show to talk through where things are at in your own family at the moment.
Okay, well, we're 5 years in to my daughter's illness, which may seem like an extremely long time, and it is, but it's in the world of eating disorders, it's quite, for want of a better word, quite an average length of time. I think the statistics say that on average, a sufferer can take about 6 years to recover from an eating disorder. Personally speaking, my daughter is now at university in the final year of her degree, doing extremely well. She still has an eating disorder, but she's, I would like to say, in recovery. So she has some good days, she has some bad days, she has wobbles. We don't like to call it relapse. It's just a wobble when things don't go right. But then that happens in life generally anyway. So things are far more positive than they were. And that's what I'd like to get over, that for other parents of as we like to call them, eating disorder warriors, there is hope. There is light at the end of the tunnel. Keep going. Take it a day at a time, but keep going. You know, your loved one can recover.
And in terms of the emotional well-being that Lee talked about there, do you think that you've got a handle on that now? Do you think your daughter has, either as a family or individually, a handle on maybe where she was at emotionally, that journey that she was on emotionally, maybe the reason that the eating disorder kicked in the first place?
She's in a far better place emotionally. She did have quite a lot of counselling. She's chosen for the last 18 months not to have counselling, but we just try as a family and with her close friends to be as open as possible. I think that's really important to say. You know, as a parent, don't worry about what you say to your loved one. Don't feel frightened, because we felt at times we were walking on eggshells and we were going to say the wrong thing and, you know, maybe set her back. But that, you know, people do say the wrong thing. That's life. But she's in a much better place, because I think because we are open and honest, we try and get everything out there. I think that's the best way to be. You know, if you bottle things up, you know yourself that only makes your situation, your problem, all the more difficult to deal with. So try and just share it. Share your problem. Share your feelings.
Cara, in terms of yourself in this one, you know, the stats at the start that we talked about said it can take up to 3 years before someone might go and seek help. Then you might be on a journey and a pathway that might take you 6 years to come out the other side. You're 2 years in, if you like. Do you feel like you're on a journey to something more positive? Do you feel like those steps are now being taken?
Yeah, I definitely think I'm a lot more positive now. I think recovery is hard and it's not what you expect. So I thought once I'd recovered, once I got past restricting every day, I thought I'd just be fine. But then you get into, so now I'm into like binge eating. So restricting, binge eating. I'll have like the odd couple of good days, and on them days I think like I'm recovered. So if someone asks me if I'm all right, I'm like, yeah, I'm really good, I'm great. But then the next day I could wake up and just not want to eat at all, and I can't explain it. It's like a switch just switches in my head and I don't want to. But then by the end of the day I might be fine again, I might feel all right, and I might be able to eat. Or yeah, I think it's hard to explain recovery, and it's hard to explain where you are in recovery, but I'm doing better than I was, definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, do you see Cara as being on a good path, Lee, in terms of the progress that she's made in the brief amount of time that she's been with organisations and people like yourself?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, Cara was very honest and said before that, and we see this a lot in TEDS, that, you know, we discuss mental health in TEDS, obviously, and we think it's a private thing. Some people, like Cara, are very, very happy to speak openly about their health, whether it's physical health or mental health. It's a private matter. And actually, it's probably important to say that everything we do in TEDS is completely confidential. And for us, that's been one of the foundations of the group. So if you want to share your story, and I have to say, Cara is just such a warrior, because she not only wants to share her story, but she wants to help other people as well. And Cara actively volunteers in the group and actively helps and supports other people who are further away from recovery than she's describing. So I think what's lovely about TEDS is you can talk outside of the group if you want to, or you can keep it private. But within that private safe setting, we can encourage you, as Tina said, to be as honest and as authentic as you can be. What happens in the group, of course, is that people share their stories. We often end up having a laugh. In the depths of despair, we still end up having a laugh. And then people suddenly realise that there is no normal. you know, that we have lots of sayings. As I said, normality is very overrated. So I think Cara's also highlighted the issue of recovery, that we talk about recovery and relapses, and we talk about how recovery might look different for different people. So for some people to feel okay, they might need to know that they need to be at a healthy weight. They never want to overeat and they never want to be overweight. And we think that's okay. As long as you're not punishing yourself psychologically or physically in the process. So we talk a lot about balance. We talk about a sliding scale of wellness. The main message to get across is whatever recovery looks like for you. And for us, recovery is real, because even this week I've had an email from someone saying, I've been in recovery for years, I've seen your group, can I please come along and talk to people and let them know you can beat this? Well, of course you can.
Well, I was going to ask you, what does it look like? So we talk, you know, 5 years down the path, two years down the path. What does it look like 15 years down the path, or 10 years down the path, 18 years down the path?
It actually depends. Honestly, it depends on the individual. These are complex illnesses, and for a minority of people, an eating disorder is going to persist throughout their life, and they may have, you know, at times of stress or difficult times, they may revert back to that. But we've seen in the 18 years, we have seen over and over and over again, people completely break free of the illness, and people who say, I will never restrict again. I will never make myself sick again. I will learn to love and accept myself, and that's sort of the foundation of a lot of what we do. And it's the most magical thing in the group when you can see the insights that people have, that, you know, our worth is so much more than standing on a machine and looking at a number and that setting of us off to have low mood and a bad day. And that's why, in a way, at TEDS, we avoid all the stuff that happens in conventional services. And we talk much more about heart and soul and future goals. And what would your life look like without recovery? The main thing is it's possible. Recovery with the right help and support, whatever that might mean for you, you can fully break free of it, or you can be well. You can be kinder to yourself. You can be, we talk a lot in the group about being compassionate to your mind and compassionate to your body. And that's a lot of the work that we do.
TEDsUK.com has got all the information that you need to know about talking eating disorders and the work that Lee does, and obviously the work that Tina does on board with that. We've heard Cara's story as well. I deliberately haven't mentioned it, and nobody else has mentioned it either, social media. Now, I imagine when people start talking about Eating Disorders Awareness Week, they'll start, I don't know if it's like lazy journalism or something like that, but people instantly blame Instagram and images that they see. They'll blame magazine covers and images of women in particular, which are unobtainable or that have been photoshopped. Now, I didn't want to mention it just to see if anyone went, you know, it was down to images I've been looking at. And actually, no, none of you mentioned it. So can I flag it up now, Cara, with you first and foremost? Is that a potential issue for some people? But it's an overarching thing. From the things that Lee was just saying about your emotional well-being, your soul, as Tina touched on as well, that doesn't really get affected by what you see in a magazine or an Instagram. If people raise this, I mean, is it an okay thing to raise? Is it a potential issue that what people and young people are seeing on social media might become a problem?
I think it's an issue. I personally don't think it's a cause of an eating disorder. I think it's the cause of low self-esteem and feeling bad about yourself, because especially when you're trying to recover from an eating disorder and you're underweight, and then you obviously put weight on as you eat, and then you look at Instagram pictures of these amazing women and men who have got the perfect bodies and the muscles, and, you know, they're vegans, and I want to be vegan, but for the wrong reasons. So when they do it for the right reasons and look like that, it is triggering, because you want to just automatically be like them. But I don't think it's a cause. I personally don't think it's the cause of it. But I think photoshopping doesn't help, and fillers and implants and all the surgery you can get definitely doesn't help, for teenagers especially.
I wasn't trying to lure you into a trap by not mentioning social media, but I feel as if it's sometimes, if something comes up, particularly something which affects a lot of young people, people instantly try and blame, or will instantly turn to blame, social media.
Yeah.
But from what Cara's suggesting there, it might be a factor or a triggering factor, but then if it wasn't there, would there be something else that people would be triggered by?
I think, you know, the thing with social media is it's like everything, it's got uses and abuses. Many, many people that I've supported with eating disorders have said, of course, social media has got absolutely nothing to do with the way I'm feeling. It was this. I was bullied in school. My dad died, you know, whatever, you know, traumatic events. However, we do a 1 hour project in a school. So any school, listen, if you want us to come in, we're there in a heartbeat. We call it the Selfie Project, and we do discuss social media and the impact it has on young people, and it does have an impact. So I like to talk about tricks. You know, young people now, I was not a consumer. I'm 60 this year. I was not a consumer as a teenager, but you are now, and younger. So we talk about the tricks of that. We also talk about the dieting industry as a multi-billion pound industry that feeds on your low self-esteem. So what we like to do is just simply discuss these issues. One of the activities we do is that we will throw a load of magazines out. We'll just go to the shop that morning, throw a load of magazines out, ask young people to have a look at the magazine and tell us what they find. And as we're all aware, the magazines, as well as social media, are full, absolutely full of diets, body. Is it just me who's sick of them? You know, diets, bodies, thin bodies, fat bodies. We also talk about this thing about fat shaming. You know, like in the group, we'll say, well, who said thin is good and fat is bad? It's about health and strength. And we also educate young people on their body shape, because we all have a different body shape. So education is the key. With social media, my two younger children haven't got it, and they won't have it till they're 13. So if anybody's listening, here's my top tip. Just say no. Dead easy. Just say no. You're not having social media till you're 13, because I know that their world is going to change when they're 13, and I'll have to try and manage that with my younger boys when they get there. But most of my adult children, social media wasn't there, so they didn't have that influence. It does influence, I would say. I couldn't honestly say, hand on heart, it is the cause of eating disorders. I think there is also quite a lot of scientific evidence to show that some people actually are genetically predisposed to developing an eating disorder. And I think there's no simple answer with this, but I think with social media, we teach young people to challenge what they see. And within a 1 hour session, at the end of a 1 hour session, young people will say, I'm not going to be on social media more than 2 hours. I'm going to block X, Y, and Z. I'm going to be a bit more critical about who I follow. There's many, many positive people you can follow on Instagram. So ourselves, Ted's Liverpool, we try and post lots of inspirational quotes. There's a lot of positive stuff on there as well as negative. But I think it's about teaching our children to challenge the images they see, to challenge the tricks of the tricks of consumerism, really, and how they're being tricked into thinking they need to have this perfect body, and they need to have the diet foods and the diet drinks. We actually celebrate in TEDs. Very often people will say, it happened to us recently, somebody was dying. I don't know whether she's listening, but somebody was dying to have her mum's spag bol and she wouldn't. And she sent me a photograph of her eating spag bol recently, and we had a little party in TEDs Liverpool to celebrate. So I think social media can have a very positive influence as well as a negative, but you have to evaluate it critically. We have to challenge the stereotypes we see. It's important to say that males are affected by this too. You know, this nonsense that you have to have a six-pack and a V-shaped back and all these unattainable things. How about just self-love and self-acceptance? How about just being kind to yourself and kind to other people, regardless of what you look like? And that's what we advocate in TEDs.
Tina, I knew it was a question worth raising. I got the most comprehensive answer I think I'd have in the whole interview. Do you echo what you just heard there?
Yeah, I totally agree. And especially what Cara said earlier, that I think the self-esteem issue is, I think she hit the nail on the head there. Again, personally speaking, it wasn't something that affected my or had contributed to my daughter's eating disorder. But in as she's recovering, I think there are aspects of social media, you know, the photographs and images that are, as Cara again mentioned, a trigger how she feels and don't really benefit her mood.
In terms of people going on Instagram for positive things, Ted's Liverpool is your Instagram feed, so people can follow those quotes, see the spag ball and everything in between. Yeah. Ted's Liverpool on Instagram, the website tedsuk.com, and if you want to get in contact with the team, tedsuk.com has got all the contact information. There's a book as well. Just mention the book, because I'll be honest, the title doesn't roll off the tongue.
It's a really important book. I was very, very blessed to train with Professor Janet Treasure's team in London, and there is a fantastic book that we'd recommend for families called Skills-Based Learning, Caring for a Loved One with an Eating Disorder, and it's by Professor Janet Treasure. It's very practical, it's very informative, and it will really, really help you understand the eating disorder, and more importantly, it will help you to stay calm, compassionate, and give you very practical ideas of how to support your loved one through this horrible, horrible illness.
Thank you for the recommendation on that one. Skills-based learning.
Caring for a loved one with an eating disorder.
By Professor Janet Treasure.
Yeah.
Great shout. Thank you for your time. Lee Bess, really
thank
appreciate you,
you
coming
thanks
on the programme.
Thanks so much for
Tina,
having us.
Tina, Cara, thank you for coming on the programme too. TedsUK.com if you want to find out some more information about the fantastic work that they do at Talking Eating Disorders. That wraps up Mental Health Monday for this week, and thanks for downloading the podcast. If you're able to share it through your social media, that will be absolutely wonderful. If you want to like, subscribe, 5-star rating, we'll accept anything over 3 stars. If you want to get involved there, just search Mental Health Monday within your podcast provider, and we'll be back with another Mental Health Monday next week.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.